close, I can almost feel the tickle of his stubble on my cheek. I don't dare open my eyes.
Shady Grove, you're stronger than this. You're stronger than the Shadow Man. You're stronger than your grief. You're stronger than I ever was, baby. Stop playing now. Stop playing before you tie yourself to that fiddle so tight you'll never be free. I know I lied. I know you don't have any reason to trust me now. But I made that fiddle with all the hate and the pain and the grief in my heart. And because of it, I lost my life. And all the things I loved most in this world. I lost you and Jesse and your mama. I even lost music, Shady Grove. That fiddle don't make you play with all your soul. It eats your soul. It takes everything that's good in you and turns it to pain and hate and rage. Stop playing now, baby, before you lose everyone you love. Before you lose yourself.
His hand closes over mine, and his fingers feel so familiar, I gasp. He doesn't make me stop drawing the bow across the strings. He holds my hand in his and lets me choose. I draw the bow away from the strings at the same moment a gunshot explodes in the air. The final note of Oh Me Wise fades with the sound of the bullet. Frank is on the floor, bleeding from a wound in his shoulder. Jim is gone, and so is Daddy, if he was really here. Then police officers are rushing into the room. They kick the gun away from Frank and survey the house, checking for more dangers. Everyone is alive and whole, even Frank, who groans loudly on the floor, still swearing at his brother's ghost.
I killed you. I killed you, Jim. I won. No matter what you do now, I won. I killed you. I got my revenge.
Mama rushes across the room and throws an arm around me, crushing honey between us. Aunt Ina follows, burying her face in my hair. We're safe. But whatever's left of Frank's life belongs to Jim now. He'll never be free. But neither will Jim. They've bound themselves together in hate. 29. The story of Jim's murder unravels bit by bit. Jesse really did tell Frank that Jim slept with Marlene. He was pissed at Jim and wanted to get back at him. Well, he'd always been pissed at Jim. But he didn't plan on Frank's decades-long grudge turning murderous, or on being framed for the crime. He didn't plan on Frank threatening to kill everyone he loves if he told the truth. He didn't plan on Jim's haunting and Frank's descent into madness. Of course, he didn't plan on any of that because he's Jesse, and being reckless and selfish is all he knows. But he's getting out today and coming home to us. Mama asked if I wanted to go with her to pick him up, but I said no. Even though all I wanted was to get Jesse out of jail, I'm so angry at him that I can hardly bear it. He didn't kill Jim, but he still played a role in his death. His lies cost Honey her father, Mama her husband. I don't know if I can even look at him. After all he's put us through. And what else is Jesse capable of? What else has he hidden from me? Jim claimed his was the second death Jesse caused. I don't want to think too hard about Daddy and what Jesse might have done to hurt him. At least Frank's going to prison, and justice is shaking itself out, bringing everyone some closure. I do wonder if Frank and Jim could have reconciled. If they could have gotten past their petty squabbles and the divide their daddy's death made between them. Could all this have been avoided? Could Jim still be alive? A part of me thinks Jim was in denial about why he stayed near Frank all those years. He didn't stick around to see Frank slip up and show his true colors. He wanted to be punished for their daddy's death. And he wanted Frank to make him suffer. Like Jesse choosing to stay in jail for Jim's murder. All the other stories that have unraveled are just as bad as Jim's death and Jesse's imprisonment. Brandy and the Wasps and my grandfather, that secret makes me shiver every time I think of it and feel a strange shame burning in the center of my chest. Yet the story I'm most stuck on, the one that keeps me awake at night and sends me into the woods with a fiddle case I'm barely able to keep closed, that's Daddy's. He made this fiddle. Not the instrument itself, but its heart, its soul. His grief made it capable of summoning ghosts and shaped it into a doorway for evil. I'm trying to hate him for that. Trying to summon up a righteous anger for his lies and his weakness. But I feel the same thing I've always felt for Daddy. Kinship. We are the same. I know we're the same because I can't give up this fiddle. No matter how many people it has hurt, no matter how much danger it has put me in, I can't give it up. That's why I'm in the woods now, kneeling on the warm pine needles with my hands hovering over the fiddle's case, mid-morning sunshine filtering across my skin. After a long moment, I open the clasps and stare into the open case. The trees sigh around me, the ghosts stirring in their branches. They are waiting for me. I know now they've always been waiting for me. I've somehow managed to keep the case closed these past 3 weeks, left the fiddle lying against its green velvet. I know this isn't what Daddy wants for me. I know the Shadow Man will kill me if I keep playing. Daddy said I was stronger than he was. He said I could let it go. But he was wrong. I will stare this rattlesnake in the face until its poison stops my heart. Because there's one more ghost I have to raise, no matter what it costs me. Mama went to pick up Jesse from jail over an hour ago. And once he's here, this might be my last chance to raise Daddy's ghost. I waited all this time because I wanted to be sure I could do it. Sure I wouldn't mess up. And maybe deep down, I was afraid to call Daddy's ghost. Afraid that if I saw him again, I'd never get over my grief. I pull the fiddle from the case and ready my bow. Fear and love battle inside me, making my hands tremble. I touch the bow to the strings, and while I've never done drugs, I imagine this is what it feels like when you press down the plunger on a syringe, sending heroin into your bloodstream. A release. I let the Twa sisters pour from my fiddle, dark as river water, deep as my grief. Almost immediately, the Shadow Man's pull begins, a heavy blackness just at the edges of the music.
Shady,
someone says behind me. I swivel, and there's Jesse standing among the trees, his eyes on me. I didn't think he'd be home this soon. After weeks of bureaucratic processes I don't understand, I thought his release today would take hours. Or maybe it was hours, and I just lost track of time. Either way, he's here now. He's home.
Shady, put the fiddle down,
Jesse says, walking slowly toward me with hands outstretched, as if I'm a feral cat he's trying to tame. A surge of anger floods me. I don't play, but I cling tight to the instrument. It seems to cling to me, too, desperate to hold on to me. This is the moment I've been waiting for, Jesse's release. It's what I've been fighting so hard for. But I don't feel happy or even relieved because he's going to take this fiddle from me. And it's going to be like hearing Daddy was dead all over again. Like having my heart ripped out a second time. And if he takes it, I can never ask Daddy what happened to him the day he died, or learn how Jesse was involved.
Sadie,
Jesse says,
I'm home. You brought me home.
Another voice whispers in my mind, seductive and sure.
He killed your father. He's the real reason your daddy's dead, not the fiddle. That's why he kept the fiddle from you, so you'd never learn what he did.
I shake my head, trying to dispel the shadow man's voice. It's impossible to believe Jesse could do such a thing, but I can't root out the thought. Not after what he told me at the jail. Not after what Jim said. Jesse kneels beside me.
Put the fiddle down. You don't understand how powerful it is. What it did to him.
I push away from him and stand. What did you do to him, Jesse? I hear myself say. Jesse stands too and cocks his head.
To Daddy?
I only stare at him. So Jesse reaches for the fiddle. Before I know what I'm doing, I've drawn back my hand and slapped him across the face. Don't you dare. Jesse reels away from me, holding a hand to his cheek. I put my burning fingers to my mouth, shocked by what I've done.
He hit me like that once too, you know, when I tried to stop him from playing the fiddle.
Jesse says, you're lying, I answer, another crack running through my foundation.
He wasn't perfect. No matter how much you wanted him to be. You act like he was God's gift to the fucking world. But he wasn't. He loved those ghosts and that fiddle more than he loved us.
Jesse's concern for me is quickly turning to anger. That's not true, I say.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe it was the shadow man acting through Daddy, whispering to him the way he does to me, the way he's whispering now.
When I decided to stop learning fiddle, he wouldn't talk to me for weeks. I was a child, and he gave me the cold shoulder.
I don't know what to say to that. Jesse presses on, relentless.
He kept playing. Even though he knew it was hurting you. After I told him about the little girl who was haunting you,
shock grips me like a cold, dead hand.
I guess I should have put it together before now.
Daddy knew his fiddle playing was hurting me, but he kept playing anyway. His need for the fiddle was bigger than his desire to keep me safe. I push the hateful thought away. How much do you know about the little girl?
I know you were having nightmares about her. That you were seeing her all over the house.
You used to cry and say there was a dead girl in your ceiling.
Then there were the wasps.
I shudder, remembering their wings brushing my skin, the promise of their stings. My eyes fill with tears. She was his sister, Brandy, his and Aunt Ina's. And their dad is the reason she died.
What are you talking about? Aunt Ina told me. That's why Daddy was so obsessed with the fiddle. He was trying to hold on to his sister. Some distant part of me, which the Shadow Man can't touch, whispers that I'm doing the same thing. Clinging to the fiddle to keep Daddy close to me. Jesse's face has gone pale, but he shakes his head. Fine. Whatever, his dead sister, we were his living children, and he chose her over us. He crosses his arms. The Shadow Man's voice whispers again, sending chills through me. And before I know it, I'm hearing his words leave my mouth. That's why you killed Daddy, I say. Because you thought he didn't love us enough? I didn't mean to say it. I'm not even sure if I believe it. But it pops out like a cork from a bottle of cheap champagne. Jesse's mouth drops open. I didn't kill him. All I ever did was try to protect you. Take care of you, he says. I didn't mean for him to die, I swear. I just wanted all the ghost stuff to end. I wanted you to be safe. I was only 13 years old, Shady, and I already felt like I was halfway to my grave. I wanted to spare you. Spare me, I laugh. What have you spared me from? Not from Daddy's burden. That's what the fiddle is. However much I might love it, it's my burden now. I didn't kill him, Jesse says, his eyes desperate, pleading. I took the fiddle when I went to stay with a friend by the lake, because I didn't want him to play while I was gone, because I wouldn't be there to make sure you were all right.
He's a liar. Remember how he lied to Frank about Jim? How he lied to you?
The Shadow Man whispers. I shake my head, gritting my teeth. I feel like I'm being torn in two. You're lying, I say to Jesse. You wanted to destroy it. You always hated it. Jesse stares into my eyes, and whatever he sees there makes up his mind. I won't let you die for this fiddle. Not like he died. His hand shoots out and he grabs the fiddle from me, ripping it out of my hands. I should have destroyed it then, he says, backing away. If I had, maybe Daddy would still be alive. But I'm going to destroy it now. And then he's running. I leap to my feet and chase him through the trees, and I know exactly where he's going. My fractured rib feels like it's on fire, but I ignore it because my life is being carried away in my brother's arms, carried away to be drowned. If he wanted to destroy it, he could smash it against any of the hundreds of trees zipping by our running bodies. But he's going to drown it, the way he drowned Daddy. I see that now. I run and run and run, my body screaming at me to stop. My mind screaming at my body to keep moving, to keep putting one foot in front of the other. I break through the trees into the marshy area that surrounds the lake just in time to see Jesse draw back his arm and throw the fiddle high into the air. It spins out over the water and then plummets down, far, far out into the lake. No! I scream, and the pain in my rib is nothing to the stab of panic that shoots through my heart. I leap into the lake, fully clothed, swimming as hard as I can, but I'm already gasping, the water dragging at me like quicksand. I dive down where I saw the fiddle fall, and my descent to the bottom is an echo of my last dive. But when I touch the silt this time, my fingers find the hardwood of the fiddle. I shoot upward and surface with a gasp, the pain in my rib blinding. As soon as I get a gulp of air, I'm underwater again, fighting against the pain in my chest and the weakness in my limbs.
The shadow man seems to laugh inside my head.
Sadie!
Jesse screams. He splashes toward me. He reaches me quickly and begins to tow me toward shore. Well, I kick and hit at him, thrashing with all my might to get away, to keep him from the fiddle. I'll drown before I lose it. He drags us both to shore, and I lie in the grass, clutching the sodden instrument to my chest. Please, Jesse, please, I cry. I need it. Jesse gets to his feet and stands over me.
You could have died, Shady, just like he died. All for this fucking fiddle.
His voice breaks into a sob. He's right. The fiddle has too much power over me. The shadow man won't stop until I'm lying belly up in this lake. But that doesn't change the fact that Jesse caused our daddy's death. Jesse's the one who needs to answer for what he's done, not me. What did you do? How did you make him crash? I know you did something to make it happen. There wasn't a deer in the road. I yell, clutching the fiddle to my chest. That's why Jesse let himself be framed for Jim's murder. Because just like Jim's ghost said, he was owed punishment for something else. Jesse almost admitted as much when I visited him in juvie. He said he'd caused enough trouble and pain for one lifetime, that he had done something I'd never forgive him for. You're right. There wasn't, Jesse says, struggling to push down his sobs. I made it up. I wasn't even in the truck. I never told anyone, not even Mama. I was too ashamed. I gaze up at my brother's anguished face, anger turning to dread in my stomach. What happened? Jesse finally gets his tears under control. Daddy came to my friends to get the fiddle back. And my friend was kind of high and his parents weren't there. So I was on my own. And Daddy was so mad at me for taking his fiddle. We argued. And I got scared and I grabbed the fiddle and ran. I tried to stay in the woods along the lake. But when the trees thinned out, he spotted me. And then there was nowhere to go but the water. He was still driving at the edge of the road, yelling at me from the window. Begging me to get in the truck. Begging me not to hurt the fiddle. He said it would kill him to lose it. Said if I loved him at all, I should get in the truck and give him back his fiddle. You should have, I say. Jesse shakes his head slowly, fresh tears running down his cheeks. I wish I had. I swear to God, every day I wish. He takes a shuddering breath. How? I whisper, unable to say the words. I ran out onto the dock. And then I heard his truck hit the water. He must have sped up and lost control trying to get to the boat ramp. And the truck rolled over the bank. And then it was sinking. And then he was dead. All for that stupid, goddamned piece of wood. Jesse wipes his eyes again. His voice is hoarse. Now that he's talking, he can't seem to stop. I dropped the fiddle on the dock and ran to the truck. I waded in and tried to pull open the door, but I couldn't. But his window was down, so I put my head down in the water and looked in. He was already dead. The water was red, and he was kind of floating upside down. A sob wrenches itself from my chest. I'm sorry. Jesse reaches for me, but pulls back. like he's not sure if he's allowed to offer me comfort. "Then what?" I ask, my voice hardly more than a croak. "Did you pull him out?" Jesse clenches his jaw, like he's fighting back nausea. I reached in and pulled him by his shirt. Got about half his body out of the truck window. There was blood everywhere. Jesse's eyes are wide with fear, as if he's seeing Daddy's body for the first time, right here in the woods. And he was dead. The kind of dead you don't come back from. Eyes open and staring. More blood out of him than in. "What did you do?" I ran all the way back to my friend's house and we called the police. I lied and said I was in the truck with him. That I swam out the window. I was soaked and covered in blood, so they believed me. They thought I was lucky. But I wasn't lucky. I think we're all cursed, Shady. I hear an echo of Mama's words from a few weeks ago, saying she thinks maybe she's cursed because her husbands keep dying. I close my eyes, but all I see is Daddy's body in its coffin. The unnatural-looking suit, dark against the white pillows. How much smaller his body seemed. I couldn't bear to look at his face. So instead, I looked at his hands. The hands I had spent so much time watching play the fiddle. Clean fish for supper. Dig into the deep, dark earth in the back garden. "We have to destroy it," Jesse says, ripping my thoughts back to the present, to the fiddle clutched in my hands. All I feel for Jesse in this moment is hate. For taking Daddy. For trying to take my fiddle. The image of Daddy's body floating open-eyed in the red water sears itself into my mind. Twice now I could have joined him. "Let me take it," Jesse says. "I'll do it for you." He comes near and puts his hands on the instrument. My arms are so weak, he pries it from my grip without effort. As soon as the wood leaves my hands, I feel an unbearable hunger to have it back. "Please, Jesse, please. I'll die if you take it. I'll die, Jesse," I sob out. "I'll die just like Daddy did, and it will be all your fault. Didn't Jesse just tell me Daddy said the same thing? That it would kill him to lose the fiddle? Well, Daddy was right." Jesse stiffens as if he realizes it too. But then he turns away, carrying the fiddle back toward the trees. "Wait!" I scream. And he pauses, still turned away. "Let me play it one more time. One more time, Jesse, that's all. I'll raise Daddy's ghost and you can see him again. He'll make everything all right. And then you can do whatever you want. You can drown it, or burn it, or smash it to pieces. Just let me play one more time. Don't you want to see him? Don't you want to tell Daddy you're sorry?" Jesse turns, anguish carved into every line of his face. "Do you promise? One more time?" "I swear," I say. "I swear." I don't know whether I'm lying or not. And neither does Jesse. "Now," he says. "Here." I shake my head. If I played the fiddle now, with my grief thrumming through me, filling up my body like the water that drowned Daddy, I'd wake every ghost in this wood. It'd be too much for the Shadow Man to resist. "I'm too tired now," I say. We stumble back through the woods, Jesse's hands tied around the fiddle. "I'm going to keep the fiddle then, until you're ready to play it for the last time."
I won't lose you the way I lost him.
The walk is endless and agonizing. But we finally break through the trees into the yard outside our trailer. Mama's rental car is there. I'd forgotten she brought him home. Jesse stops outside, like he's afraid to go in and face her twice in one day. I push past him into the trailer, and Mama looks up, her eyes widening at the sight of my drenched, dirty form.
Mama,
Jesse says, coming inside with me. His face crumples.
I'm so sorry. I should have said it earlier, but
His voice breaks. She crosses the room and pulls Jesse into a hug, crushing him against her. She holds him to her like he was dead and came back to life, and she's never gonna let anything happen to him ever again.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He sobs into her shoulder. She shushes him like a baby and holds on, rocking him gently while the grief pours out of him, unstoppable, seemingly endless. She holds on while his tears and snot cover her blouse, while his body shakes like he's frozen all the way to his bones. But finally, she pulls back and puts her hand on his face.
I don't blame you, baby. Maybe you done wrong, but you didn't throw that hammer. It's not your fault.
I want to ask her if she knows he's the reason Daddy's dead. But I can see in her eyes, she knows everything. She knows all that Jesse's done. And she forgives him. She'd forgive me too, if it had been me. But it wasn't. I climb to my feet, walk to the bathroom, and slam the door behind me. 30. The next morning, golden light falls across the green fields down the road from our trailer, making the wildflowers along the barbed wire blaze. The sky looks like somebody took a bite out of a Georgia peach, the orange fading into pink at the edges. I don't know how the world can go on being so beautiful when all this horror keeps unfolding in my life. I came out to the fields to see something twisted and dark, something like the grief and anger wrapped around my insides. Isn't a lightning-struck oak tree the perfect companion for a girl whose daddy's food for worms? Whose family's secrets keep rising out of the ground like locusts? A girl who might murder her own brother to get the fiddle he's trying to keep away from her? I almost feel capable of it. The shadow man whispered all night in my dreams, and twice I nearly got out of bed to take the fiddle from Jesse. I forced myself to lie still, to obey Daddy's wishes. Now my feelings are going in so many directions. I don't know what's true anymore. Jesse's the reason my daddy's dead. If he hadn't taken the fiddle, Daddy would still be here with us. But if he did it for me, even partly for me, maybe I'm the reason too. Maybe nobody's innocent. Not Mama for refusing to see, refusing to know. Not Aunt Ina, who kept Daddy's secrets even after he was gone. Daddy's guiltier than all of us for letting his grief rend the veil, opening a hole ghosts can flit through and creating a space for the Shadow Man to fester and haunt us. After all, he kept playing even though he knew it brought my nightmares, even though he knew I was in danger. That's hard to forgive. When I reach the oak, it doesn't look like the twist of misery that's inside me. Instead, it's glowing in the morning light. I slide down its rough bark to the grass. In the quiet of the field, away from the fiddle's pull, I almost believe Daddy's words. He said I was strong enough to choose the people I love. I hope he's right. I don't want to be like Jim and Frank, chained to grief and hatred and a deadly grudge. And even though I loved Daddy more than anyone else in this world, I don't think I want to be like him either. I don't want to sacrifice my family, my very existence, to the fiddle's magic. I want more. I want love and life and beauty. I want to glow like this lightning-struck oak tree in the day's first light. No matter how much it hurts, it's time to let the fiddle and its painful past go. Holding my decision close, I get up and go home and make my way to Jesse's room. When he doesn't answer my knock, I stick my head in.
What?
Jesse groans from underneath his pillow, his voice groggy with sleep. He's always slept with his head under a pillow, which I've never understood. Maybe he got in the habit from trying to block out Daddy's nightly fiddle playing. Get that pillow off your head. We've got things to do today, I say, my voice determined. Some ghosts to lay to rest. Jesse's face appears. His sleepy eyes are full of fear, but he nods.
Okay. Let me get dressed.
As I sit on the couch waiting for Jesse, I think about calling Cedar, or Sarah, or Orlando. I think about asking my whole band to come. They'd be here in a heartbeat, and they'd make it easier for me. But this feels like something Jesse and I need to do on our own. Something only we can share.
Where to?
Jesse asks once we're settled in the cab of Jim's truck. The lake? Jesse is quiet for a long moment, but then he shakes his head.
He's got no reason to stay there. That's not where he'd be.
You sure?
It ain't us,
he says, starting the engine. The fiddle lies on the seat beside me, and Jesse glances at it every few minutes as we drive. He's afraid I'm going to snatch it up and jump out of the truck. I can't say the thought hasn't crossed my mind, but I'm resolute. I've made up my mind to be rid of the thing after its final performance. When we pull onto Aunt Ina's road, Jesse starts drumming the wheel with his fingers. You've never been back here, I say, realizing why he's so nervous.
Couldn't. Not without him here.
Or is it really because he'd be too much here? Hints of him in every room. Memories crowding around every object. The atoms of his grief in every breath we take. I know now where Daddy's true pain lives. And it's in Aunt Ina's attic. This is where everything started. Brandy's death, Daddy's grief, Ina's trauma. And all it led to. Mama's affair, Jesse's pain, my unbearable loss. It makes sense that this is the place it will end. Or at least, where the fiddle will play its last desperate notes. Aunt Ina opens the door. The cuts on her face almost healed. If she's surprised to see Jesse standing on her doorstep with Daddy's fiddle in his hands, she doesn't show it. She steps back to let us in, and then trails behind us up the stairs. But she hovers at the threshold of my old bedroom while Jesse and I move the dresser to uncover the attic door. One arm is wrapped around her stomach, and one shaking hand covers her mouth. I'm surprised again by how small the attic door is. It looks like a place a child would sneak off to play. Instead, Brandy was sent up here to die. Are you ready? I ask Aunt Ina, as gently as I can. Her eyes seem to plead with me, not to make her go up those stairs, not to make her walk back into the past. But her feet carry her to us, and she hands us our flashlights. We go single file up the stairs, Jesse in the lead. The attic looks the same as it did when Cedar and I came up, though now that I know its full history, the room feels darker and smaller and more frightening. Aunt Ina lights some candles she brought up, and we turn off our flashlights. A soft flickering light fills the room. We let the silence settle around us for a little while, our nervous breathing the only sound. I listen for wings, but there's nothing living up here, except the termites boring their way incessantly through the wood. It's a rotten room with a rotten past. Aunt Ina starts speaking as if continuing an earlier conversation.
"We got word he died the year you were 6, she says. "I remember, because you were doing a family tree project at school and kept asking who your grandpa was. And we were glad to be able to tell you he was dead. Then you left it be.
I remember the way Daddy held me tight and wept into my hair the night his father's ghost came. How he clutched me to him like I was the most precious thing on earth. I can't imagine being so afraid of my own daddy. I take a deep breath and bring the fiddle up.
"Can you play Brandy's song?"
Aunt Ina asks.
"I'll try.
I know now that's what Daddy's song was, a lament for Brandy." I close my eyes and look down into myself, down into my deepest, farthest memories. A haunting melody floats up to meet me. After a few moments, I feel the air begin to stir, a welcome chill entering. I almost expect to see Brandy herself, eternally young, traumatized by wasps. But it's Daddy who appears. He is exactly the way I remember him. Dark hair, dark eyes, and a sad, lopsided smile.
"Shady Grove,"
he says, eyes locked on my face like I'm the most beautiful thing he's ever seen. "Daddy." My heart fills with an ache that's part joy and part grief. The two almost too close to tell apart. Jesse's here.
"Hey, Dad. Daddy."
Jesse chokes out.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry for what I did."
Daddy shakes his head.
"You did right, son. You always did right. But you're dead because of me,"
Jesse says.
"No. I'm dead because of myself. Because I couldn't let go of the past. I don't want the same for you two. I want you to be free of all this."
He gestures around the room.
"Well,"
Aunt Ina whispers from her corner. And he breaks into his first true smile.
"Ina,"
Daddy says.
"Where's Brandy?"
she asks, interrupting his joy.
"I thought she'd be here."
There's so much longing in her voice. Daddy shakes his head.
"Brandy didn't have any reason to stay up here. Her conscience was clear. She left as soon as she died, as the innocent always do."
"But what about my dreams?" I can't help but interrupt. "With the little girl and the wasps. I think my little sister Honey dreamed about her too."
"Those are because of our father,"
Daddy says.
"That trouble only started after he died. That man's become a thing of nightmares, worse than he was living. A black pit of despair and self-loathing and hate."
"Shadow Man," I say, shuddering. "It's him, isn't it?" I knew it on some level,
but could never completely admit it to myself. All along, it was my grandfather haunting me. As the Shadow Man, with the rattlesnake and the alligator, even with the little dead girl in my ceiling. He used his own daughter's death, her murder, to torment me, and then my baby sister. He whispered in my ear, making me think my own brother killed Daddy. Daddy nods.
I thought you'd be free of him after I died. But when you started playing the Twa sisters in the woods, he saw how like me you were. How you opened yourself to the music.
He knew your grief and pain could make him strong again.
That's why he led you to the fiddle.
My fingers tremble, making the bow squeal. I'm the one who drew the Shadow Man here. With my grief and my pain, I let him back into our world. What does he want from me? I ask. To kill me?
Maybe I'm not sure he even knows. I think he wants to cling to this family, to keep on hurting us, even in death. Maybe because of what he's become, he can't do anything except try to destroy what's good and pure. There's no saying what a twisted heart like his is after. I don't know what he wants, but he's not going to get it. We're not going to let him.
Daddy, I whimper, my terror overtaking me. Believing the Shadow Man wanted to kill me was bad enough, but not knowing his true motives is somehow worse.
Don't be scared, Shady Grove.
Daddy says.
We're here now. Your family. We won't let him take you. We'll help you.
His eyes blaze, kindling a final ember of courage in me, pushing away my terror and my guilt. When he sees it start to burn in my eyes, he nods.
Baby, I think we've all had enough of that song. Enough of that grief. Play us something with some joy in it.
It takes effort to stop playing Brandy. Like that's the one song this fiddle was really made to play, and it's not ready to give up its purpose. I see now why the Shadow Man taunted me with this song. He's the one who killed Brandy. The one who caused all my daddy's pain. I have to yank the bow away from the strings, plunge in the attic into a sudden silence. I know better than to give the silence hold, though. Without thinking, I start playing I'll Fly Away, which is a strange choice for a family that's not religious, but it's got joy and hope in it, which is mostly what we need. Daddy smiles sadly for a minute, but then he starts singing, his voice the honey on gravel, I remember. Aunt Ina joins in, a little off pitch, but that never hurt anyone. I look over at Jesse, and even he's singing, or mouthing the words anyway. The attic, this place of torment and shame, this sealed tomb, fills with my strings and their voices, and a rising hope. I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. I suppose that's what we all want, someday, to fly away from all this suffering and this pain. Most people don't get to fly away until they die. Until they're released from the flesh that binds them to this earth. But there's a deeper hope in the song, I think. The hope that we can leave the shadows and the pain here on earth while we live. That we can fly toward life instead of death. That our lives can be more than a slow descent into the grave. That we can fly. I think of Cedar, Orlando, and Sarah, of Mama and Honey, of Jesse and Aunt Ina, who sing on either side of me. All the people I love most in this world, The ones I have left.
So when I feel the Shadow Man creeping around us, his soul buzzing with wasps, his mind as rotten as the wood of this attic, I don't let myself feel afraid. He's drawn here, perhaps against his own wishes, perhaps knowing his dark will is weakening. But he's here all the same because we are, because Daddy and Aunt Ina have held space for him all these years, letting his poison infect Jesse and me, too. Everyone stops singing, but I play on, my hands steady. Our lack of fear seems to anger the Shadow Man. The room fills with the sound of rain, lightning, and thunder striking overhead. His voice whips around us like wind through the pines, deep and chilling.
You've always been a liar, William. Why don't you tell your children what really happened? What you did and who you blamed? I know every thought in your head, every shadow in your heart,
the Shadow Man says. You poured it into your fiddle, feeding it right to me.
I know what you are. And it's you who should have gone to prison, not me.
Fear creeps over my skin like the feet of 100 wasps.
What's he saying? Was Daddy involved in Brandy's death after all?
Of course not, I realize. The Shadow Man is a liar, a manipulator, and I shouldn't trust a word from his mouth.
Isn't that what all your songs have said?
The Shadow Man asks, and then pitches his voice into a mocking imitation of a child's, pitiful and afraid.
My fault! My fault!
Suddenly, I'm not playing I'll Fly Away. Daddy's mournful old song for Brandy pours from my fiddle again. As the music builds around us, the wind and rain pick up, lightning forking on every side. And then we're not in the attic anymore. Or somewhere else. In a memory. Or inside the song. I don't know which. It feels like dreaming. It begins with a scream. A long, endless scream. Agonized and unbearable. It goes right through me. Searing its way into my bones. The scream that started my family's history. And then there is a little girl's body on a table, covered all over in wasp stings. Her long blonde hair, the only beautiful thing left. Daddy's mother throws herself over the pale and bloated body. And little William's face is hard and set. A dark, miserable hate forming in his breast. Hate for himself. And for his father. He clenches his small fists by his sides. My fault, sings the fiddle. All along, that's what the music was saying, wordless but clear. My fault. Here in the attic, Daddy's jaw tightens. He looks just the way Jesse did when I asked him what he'd done to deserve jail. Angry and ashamed.
It was you who took the cookies, not Brandy.
Aunt Ina says to Daddy. But her voice doesn't hold judgment, only surprise and pity. Daddy nods and forces himself to speak.
She was too scared to take them on her own. I didn't think anyone would notice. I wanted to make her happy. Instead, I got her killed. I should have said something. I should have stopped him.
Daddy's voice breaks, and the sound wrenches through me. All these years, he's blamed himself for Brandy's death. All these years, he's carried that weight, that shame. I can't imagine holding all that inside me. Sensing he's losing our attention, that we feel sympathy instead of rage toward Daddy, the Shadow Man changes tactics, drawing us back into the past. The memory shifts from the house to a field, where lightning flies down, striking an enormous oak tree. William runs to it, his pull to share in the violence and devastation so great we can feel it now, in the room. As the inside of the tree burns molten, he feels his own rage burning just the same. Hot, unbearable, searing. A huge branch flies off, one of the only pieces not destroyed. William picks it up and holds it tight to his chest, letting it singe his skin, relishing the hurt. He promises himself that he'll pay, and he'll make his daddy pay, if the man is sent to prison. The moment he gets out, William will burn him like this oak tree. Until then, he'll carry the flames inside his heart and in this wood. The fiddle in my hands grows so hot I can feel the molten wood it was made of, the hate that shaped and formed it and made it what it is. Aunt Ina said Daddy made this fiddle from grief, but he made it from hate too. And shame. It's a thing of fear and loathing and pain. It's the literal embodiment of Daddy's heart. But I've seen what that tree became, and it's beautiful. Maybe this fiddle can be made beautiful too. Daddy, it wasn't your fault, I say, pitching my voice above the fiddle in the storm. You have to let what happened go. Your father's the only one to blame. Daddy's tears break, flowing like vapor down his ghostly cheeks. I lean toward him. Blaming yourself for Brandy's death is like Jesse blaming himself for yours. It's not fair. You don't hold Jesse responsible for your death. So how can you hold yourself responsible for Brandy's? Your little sister died knowing you loved her, just like I know Jesse loves me. I can see the moment my words hit home. Daddy's face fills with relief, and he falls to his hands and knees, all the guilt and pain breaking free from his chest. The storm-swept field is an attic again, the Shadow Man's hateful power almost gone. He has played his last card, and it's not a winning one. I thought if I ever made up my mind to face down the Shadow Man, if I were ever brave or strong enough, I would somehow rip him apart with my music, grind him to dust, and let him drift off on the wind. I imagined a violent struggle, bloodless, but wild as any war. But that's not how you kill a Shadow Man. I see now. You can only destroy him by letting him go. I wrench back control of the fiddle and begin playing I'll Fly Away Again. In the candlelight, I watch Daddy's and Aunt Ina's faces as they struggle through their fear and their hatred, their love and their longing. I know what to do now. I know how to cut the Shadow Man down to size. Say his name, I tell them. Make him take his true form. We've got to make him just a man again. Take back the fear that feeds his shadow form. I expect Daddy to speak, but it's Aunt Ina whose tremulous voice names the Shadow Man. George, she says. George Stephen Crawford. That was his name. But we called him Daddy. The Shadow Man, too big for these tight quarters, stops his shifting about. Aunt Ina speaks only to him. You were our father and our tormentor. And you were the reason my precious sister died.
But you were just a man,
my own daddy says.
A sad, pathetic man. You don't deserve to cling to this family. You have no claim on us.
The Shadow Man's form seems to be clearing, lightening.
Daddy's and Aunt Ina's words, spoken openly, are unveiling him. And then, he's the man I recognize. A ghost who shares my surname. Who once shared my blood. George turns his head, and his eyes settle on Daddy.
You here to forgive me?
He says, his sneering voice carrying the hoarseness of a smoker's.
There's no forgiving what you done,
Daddy says.
But hating you's not worth what it cost my family. So I'm letting you go. To heaven or to hell or to darkness, I don't care. But you've got to go. We're done letting you haunt the living.
George turns to Aunt Ina.
And you, Ina, after all I took from you.
Ina's got murder in her eyes. A look I've never seen there before. She wants to wrap her hands around his neck and choke him, but she can't. He's dead. Beyond the hurt her hands can do.
You didn't take as much as you thought you did,
she says, her voice trembling but resolute.
And you don't get to keep any of it. I'm going to wash this house of you. I'm going to erase your memory from this earth. I hope you turn to nothing on the wind. I hope you float into the atmosphere and burn up in the sun. I hope there is no afterlife for you. Only nothing. Less than nothing.
Aunt Ina crosses her arms.
I'm done entertaining your ghost.
George has lost his darkness and his wasps, and what remains is pitiful. A sad, empty old man, hardly worth the word human. He turns his eyes on me.
I never meant to be a monster,
he says. I can see a tiredness at the center of his soul, a weariness of himself and of this world. Of all these old griefs. And stop being one, I say. You've done enough harm here. So why don't you try to undo some of it? Go on now. Go on back to your rest. If there's any rest for a man like you. George nods. All the fight gone out of him. He never really had any power of his own. Only what we gave him, with our hate and our fear, our bottomless grief. He doesn't even have the strength for a farewell speech. He's there, and then he's gone, like a candle snuffed out. Aunt Ina begins to weep, the sobs pouring out of her like there was a weight on her chest, and now she can let out the breath she's been holding for 30 years. Daddy nods, his eyes sad and solemn. I wonder if he has fully forgiven himself. Can a man who turned an ordinary fiddle into a ghost magnet from sheer grief let go of his oldest, deepest pain? I transition from I'll Fly Away into a song I hope will make him smile. The song that gave me my name. I want to hear him sing it one more time. He doesn't disappoint. His eyes light up just the way I remember. And then he's singing with the most beautiful voice this world ever held, at least as far as I'm concerned. The voice that made the sun rise in the morning, the moon shine at night. The voice that bookended every day of my childhood. The voice that made this earth seem like a place worth loving. He went away 4 years ago. But it's only now that he's really going. For the last time. Never to return. So I drink in his voice and his joy. The love he presses into every syllable of this song. When he's done singing, I stop playing.
because this fiddle's dark magic's almost spent. But I can tell Daddy's spirit won't disappear right away. He's got a few minutes left. I reach out and feel his hands in mine. Cool like any other ghosts, but otherwise just as I remember. His eyes fill and brim over, but not with grief, with pride, with love. I look over at Jesse, the brother who loves me as much as my daddy does, maybe even more. I won't have him left out in the cold, wondering if he's forgiven. Come here, I say. Tell Daddy goodbye. Jesse joins us, and then Daddy takes us in his arms, the way he did when we were little and fit better. He holds us close against his chest and looks across the room at Aunt Ina.
Bye, baby sister,
he says. Bye, Will. I love you, she replies, her voice hoarse and sweet at once. Daddy pulls back so he can look at us, and I feel like the last 4 years never happened. Like he never died, and I never grew up. Like Jesse never went to jail. Like I never had to find out my family's secrets or face the monster they made. I'm a little girl in my father's arms. Safe again. There are so many things I want to say to him. So many questions I want to ask. But he's already slipping away from us. He's finally laid his burdens down. We love you, I say. I want him to go with his heart both light and full. You gave us everything we need.
I love you both,
Daddy says, one last time.
With all I am.
Then I say the words my father taught me when I was 6 years old. Go on home now. Go back to your rest. And I add, just for him, we'll keep you in our dreams.
Epilogue.
Please welcome to the stage, Wind in the Pines,
the announcer roars. The audience cheers in the welcoming way bluegrass fans always do, and Cedar leads us out, smiling his rodeo boy smile, Sarah blushing behind him. Then Kenneth, Rose, Orlando, and finally, Jesse and me. Jesse is second fiddle in our band now, playing on my old pawn shop violin. Daddy's ghost-raising fiddle is just a regular instrument now. Its haunted heart gone. I offered to drown it, or burn it for Jesse's sake. But he told me to keep it, and play it for the living. He said I should make our family's darkness into something beautiful. And then he surprised us all when he asked to join the band a few weeks ago. It took the rest of us ages to choose a name. Kenneth's first suggestion was the Ghost Whisperers, which made Cedar smack him on the back of his head. Orlando nominated Long Wing Summer for the Florida state insect, the zebra long wing butterfly. Everyone agreed it sounded nice, but Rose thought it was stupid. Actually, Rose thought all the names were stupid. We almost had to choose one without her. In the end, Sarah came up with the name. After we held a band practice in the woods, sitting out under the trees, the pine needles glowing gold around us, the whispers of the ghosts drifting through the trees.
Oh,
she said out of nowhere, and everyone looked up from tuning their instruments to stare at her. A slow smile spread across her face, making her dimple sing.
Wind in the pines,
she said, eyes all bright.
For our band name. Let's call ourselves Wind in the Pines. It's perfect.
Rose laughed. That's the first name that hasn't made me want to lose my mind. I vote yes. Then she kissed Sarah on her cheek, right over that heart-stopping dimple. Rose and Sarah had officially started dating the month before, finally brave enough to try again, after their first disastrous attempt 3 years ago. Rose doesn't mind that Sarah never puts herself out there, because Rose is always out there. So a person's only other option is to run away. And Sarah didn't run away. Instead, she fell in love.
Wind in the pines,
Cedar repeated, smiling.
It's perfect.
The rest of the band agreed. So now, months later, we're standing together on a stage for our first big show at the county fair. Cedar will be showing off a prize cow or something later. But for now, he's here with us, mandolin in hand, cowboy hat, Wranglers and all. I love our name, Wind in the Pines, not only because it describes the woods that mean so much to me, but also because it reminds me I let go of my shame. I let people into my life. Let them see who I am, trailer and all, ghosts and all, broken family and all. If I learned anything from my weeks of ghost raising, it's that shame is what makes secrets so dangerous. Shame that keeps us tied to the darkness.
Hey, y'all. We're awful glad to be here.
Cedar drawls into the microphone, playing up his accent.
We're going to start out with a bluegrass favorite, Shady Grove, which also happens to be the name of our pretty little fiddle player here.
He smiles at me, little red hearts floating over his head, and I can't help but smile back. The crowd loves it. We haven't even played a note, and they're already whistling and stomping. Once we start playing, I scan the crowd, looking for my family. I spot Orlando's parents first, sitting with Cedar's mother and Sarah's father. Mama, Aunt Ina, and Honey are in the third row. And Honey's sitting in Mama's lap, singing along, her eyes locked on me. The seat next to them is empty, and though I know he's gone on to his rest, I imagine Daddy sitting there, his eyes teary with pride, his honey gravel voice mixing with our music. Daddy's absence is a hole in the world, and it's always going to be that, no matter how many years go by. His memory is starting to bring me more comfort than pain, though, like the music he taught me to play. Bluegrass lyrics are almost always about death, loss, and unrequited love. But the music, the noise we make with our banjos and our fiddles, is joyful. The dead are always with us, even after their ghosts move on. But it's the life pulsing through our veins that makes the music. The fast, bright, twanging noise of bluegrass comes from Sarah's shy dimple and Cedar's sly smile, from Kenneth's raucous nonsense and Rose's sailor-worthy swearing. It comes from the wonder Orlando feels when he holds a butterfly in his hands, lovely and delicate as a dream. And today, it comes from the joy that surges up in me as I watch my baby sister's golden hair swirl in the Florida wind, her eyes as blue and bright as the September sky, her whole life stretching out before her. Bluegrass might be full of ghosts, but it's the life in it we love. This is Jesse Valinsky. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Ghostwood Song by Erica Waters, presented by Harper Teen and Harper Audio. This program was produced by B Audio Limited. Executive producer, Almeda Bainan. Text copyright 2020 by Erica Waters. Production copyright 2020 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.